This episode of the Sales Leadership Podcast is brought to you by Sales Leadership United. Since 2019, Sales Leadership United has grown to become the largest collection of sales leadership assets in the world. Check out salesleadershipunited.com and tap into tools used by elite sales leaders worldwide. Accelerate your leadership development. Solve modern sales challenges. Use fully prepped sales meetings in your next team meeting. Thousands of hours of sales leadership materials indexed and searchable with a single click. Create your own personal sales leadership library. Head to salesleadershipunited.com and use the code Rob at signup to get a free trial on me. Hi, I'm Rob Jepson, and my mission is to help sales leaders everywhere create record-setting growth from the companies they lead. I'm here to share the secrets of the world's most successful sales leaders. I don't care how big the company or how big the team, we showcase sales leaders who are taking what the market gives and then some. This show features leaders of teams who are beating their markets, winning at crazy rates, and creating life-changing years for the people they lead. The Sales Leadership Podcast is brought to you by Sales Leadership United, the world's largest collection of sales leadership assets. Be sure to check out the all-new salesleadershipunited.com. Fast-track your sales leadership development, gain insights into how other sales leaders are solving challenges similar to the ones you face, and tap into over 400 leadership topics, hundreds of video insights, battle-tested leadership frameworks, and new material that comes out every single week. Sales Leadership United is the easiest investment in yourself you'll ever make. Head to salesleadershipunited.com, use the code Rob at signup, and get a free trial on me. Now, get ready for some serious insights from sales leaders who are making it happen. And remember, don't worry, we got you. Hello, and welcome to the Sales Leadership Podcast, where high-growth sales leaders share high-growth practices and tactics. Man, I have been so glad to hear from so many of you on just how helpful this last couple months of guests have been. The DMs have been off the charts. Thank you for your support of the show. Thank you for sharing just how helpful these individual guests have been in fueling your career. And please keep them coming. I love hearing from you. I love interacting with you. It's why I do the show. And I got good news for you. Today is going to be another good one. Today, I have a guest that I'm so excited to introduce. Joe Gravino is the Vice President of Go-to-Market Search for Falcon. Falcon's an executive search firm exclusively focused on recruiting C-level executives for private equity-backed companies. Joe recruits CROs and CMOs for high-growth companies of all industries. And as a result, not only has he learned what makes for an elite sales leader, he's had to become one. I first met Joe because he shared a story on LinkedIn of how listening to guests of this very podcast helped fuel his acceleration in leading Falcon's CRO search practice. And as I got to know him, his insights were awesome. And it wasn't long before I was telling him, Joe, you got to join me for an episode. So today, we're going to talk about things that are not only going to help you grow faster and lead your team better. We're going to talk about things that are going to help you get ready for the next stage of your leadership career. This one's going to be a fun one. I hope you got your notepad ready. Let's get after it. Joe, welcome to the Sales Leadership Podcast, and thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, Rob, thanks for having me on. I'm fired up. Let's go.
Let's go. My two favorite words, man. Let's go. Why don't you start by introducing yourself? Let's start with Falcon. Introduce Falcon, what you guys do for your customers, and maybe what you do in your role for them.
Yeah, man. Well, welcome, everybody. My name is Joe Gravino. I work at a company called Falcon, as Rob introed. We are a retained executive search firm that exclusively focuses on companies that are backed by private equity. So we help these companies find their next CEO, CFO, heads of sales and marketing as they're trying to, in some cases, 5 to 10x growth in a very intense 4 to 5 year period. I lead our go-to-market practice, so I have the incredible job of recruiting and interviewing sales and marketing leaders for our PE clients' portfolio companies.
I love it. Yeah. And so you're seeing, like, because we were talking about this before we started recording, I love how you said that intense growth. Every sales leader has to face growth challenges. That's what we sign up for. And we have 50,000 leaders listening to this to you right now. And everyone has had to say, I sign up for growth. I'm raising my hand for growth. But you're looking at it through maybe a little different form of intensity. Is that a fair way of saying that?
No doubt. It is compressed into a very short period of time where every single day, week, month matters in private equity. The clock is always ticking because They are trying to do something very, very difficult. They are trying to transform these companies in a 4 to 5 year period, wherein most environments, growth is seen over a call it a 10 to 15 year period or in a public setting, quarter to quarter. You're not trying to transform a company from 10 million of revenue to 100 million of revenue in 50 or in 5 years. And so it is a very intense period that is for some leaders and executives and not for others. And so what I spend a lot of my day doing is figuring out which ones have the DNA and the want and the characteristics for that environment, which
the
is fun.
DNA. I love that. You just set up the rest of our conversation today.
All right.
You are a pro at looking for the DNA of an elite leader who can thrive in that compressed environment. I love that. That compressed environment, that DNA. But before we get into that, man, I want to go back and talk about that post that made us get connected. You made a great post on LinkedIn where you said that this episode of the show was part of how you said, I'm going to learn to become a CRO type leader, even though like you're not the CRO, but you're right. That kind of leader. You shared some of that. How has choosing to level up your own skills that way been important for you? Can you talk a little bit about that experience? Because you shared it with me, you shared it on LinkedIn. I think that would be interesting for our listeners here to get a taste of you.
Yeah, I'm happy to. And just to give everybody the background. So with Falcon, I've been there for 7 years. For the first 4 years I was there, we really were focused on just doing CEO and CFO searches for our PE clients. I was on the front lines of executing those searches for a long time, doing those for many private equity firms. We had an opportunity with one private equity firm who, you know, loved our work on the CEO and CFO front and wanted us to take on all of their CRO and CMO hires. We had never had that service offering before. I knew a lot about what makes a good leader in a private equity backed business, but I never really knew anything about what a chief revenue officer does or a chief marketing officer or sales and marketing and go to market and all the lingo that's associated with that. And so I had to get, and I accepted the opportunity. I took that on to lead the searches for that client. But then obviously I took that on to build out our go-to-market practice at Falcon. And so I had to get smart really fast. So the first place that I looked, I'm a podcast person. I listen to a podcast every single morning, 30 minutes on my way in and 30 minutes on the way back home. And one of the podcasts that I found was this one, Sales Leadership
Let's
Podcast
go.
By Rob Jepsen. Let's go.
Let's go.
I said, hey, look, I have the opportunity to sit down every morning and listen to what the most elite sales leaders are saying about what's making them beat their markets and be successful in these environments. And obviously you have sales leaders from a lot of environments, but you also have sales leaders from PE-backed environments I found. So,
yep.
That got me up to speed very quickly on top of just digging in, doing the work, looking at the profiles, having interactions and conversations, having to interview thousands of CROs at this point and just get a feel for what's making them successful, what's making them successful in a PE-backed environment. And so that was a lot of it, was just listening to your podcast, doing the research, doing the work, and continue to iterate. And it's been a really fun last 3 years.
So I love what you just said, and I don't want to delay too long because you and me have a really cool conversation set up for today that I can't wait to dive into. But there's a really great learning point here, Joe. Like, first of all, you have a really cool perspective that I hope everybody heard just said. You've interviewed thousands of candidates for a CRO position at a PE-backed firm, okay? You've got a unique perspective that I can't wait to dive into. But more important, you took charge of your own education. You took charge of your own growth. Like, I've always thought nobody should care about your development more than yourself. Any comments on why that was important for you to take charge for that rather than hope that someone would spoon feed it to you?
That's how I've been wired throughout my career. I am addicted to learning, to growth. Every time I'm always the most alive in my career with what I'm doing, when I'm learning something on the side, taking those learnings, applying them into my day to day, and then continue to iterate. I feel more aware. I feel more involved. I feel more engaged. And so I've just always been passionate about doing that. And in this case, yeah, I had the opportunity to learn everything about what makes a good CRO and CMO great. And why not go and learn from the best and learn what elite looks like, and then bake that into my belief system in terms of how I interview.
All right. We could have just stopped the episode right there if we were to do like a little 7 or 8 minute episode. You are addicted to learning and growth, is what you just said. And I would imagine that's going to be a nice segue into the DNA of an elite leader. Because I imagine
no doubt.
The elite. Yeah. Okay. So let's go. You are always looking for the successful sales leaders. You see the good ones. You see the ones who think they're good. I imagine that's probably something. Yeah. For people that get
large percentage.
Yeah. You see the ones who think they're good. And you've seen all the stuff in between. Okay. And I knew we were going to talk about that. I liked how you framed it up as the DNA of an elite sales leader. What makes them stand out? Because everybody's got scoreboard going for them, I'm sure, or else they wouldn't be talking to you. But you probably have to look at more than just what the scoreboard says. So when you're evaluating, where do you start?
Yeah, so there are a number of different elements to any really strong, successful sales leader. The three areas that I look at, and we can unpack these any way you want.
Yep.
Obviously, the first and foremost, you have to have a strong track record of growth, of identifiable wins in your career. That's just table stakes.
Yep. Next, that's the scoreboard part. Yep. That's
yeah, exactly. Part. And then the next part of that, too, is really matching the skill sets that they gain in all of the experiences they've had. And are they the right fit from a skill set standpoint to be able to hold up in a private equity backed hold period? With all the amount of building that needs to happen when you're taking, in most cases, a company from 10 million, succeeding a founder-led organization that has two AEs and no sales systems, processes, technology, people, anything, and you have to build to 100 million. That takes a very unique individual with a unique skill set. And so we look for that and test for that in various ways. And then I think getting to the DNA part, which is going to set up a lot of our conversation, we're looking for five, we call them catalysts. So one is,
let's go.
Yeah. One's execution. Two is emotional leverage. Three is leadership. Four is the cognitive horsepower or IQ. And then lastly, the EQ, the interpersonal. So we've got ways of getting at all those. We have an assessment we built that tests at all that to give us data on it. And so
wow,
from a DNA standpoint, that's the areas that we look for.
Okay. That's a great, great setup. So you got three areas. It starts with scoreboard. It goes to matching your skills to the environments that you have available. But then these five catalysts, which sound really interesting. And I guess what I love from this, and I want every one of our leaders to hear as we talk about this, Joe, as we set up the rest of this conversation, it's more than just did I put numbers on the board. Like, that's number one. That's the table stakes. That's the invitation to the dance, right?
Oh, yeah.
But we got to do more than that. In fact, do you see that sometimes? That sometimes people just point to the sales number and they don't have much more than that? And do you see that as a trap sometimes?
Yeah, for sure. And my opinion on that is that I have seen many B or C leaders who benefit from being in a fantastic organization with a great product that has a great brand that can, for lack of a better term, sell itself. And I've also seen many A player leaders in businesses that are underperforming, that have macroeconomic conditions that are fighting against them out of their control. And they are constantly finding ways to outperform and improve that business. And so we always look for people that have had at least a point in their career, some resilience to where they've had to overcome something and they've had to produce results against that. Because that's a lot of what you're going to get in a very under-resourced environment in private equity, where you have a ton of leverage and debt on the business. You oftentimes don't have the cash disposable to be able to have all the best brand, the systems, everything. And so you got to be scrappy. You have to be curious. You have to figure things out. And you have to be able to really execute your way out of, you know, most situations.
Resilience. Ingenuity. I'm writing down words here. Scrappiness. How do you evaluate for that? Like, we got 50,000 listeners right now, and all of them are fueled by A, we got numbers to hit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But all of them have to get there different ways. And so what are some things that you might suggest to our listeners that are like, hey, if you want to have this DNA, like, maybe you could just start talking me through it. Like, what are the things? Start wherever you want. If you want to start in those five catalysts or the skill sets, or you said you got B or C leaders that benefit from like everything set up for them. And I've seen those. You take someone out of that environment, think, oh, well, they're, they'll do it here. And then I see them fail. I've seen that happen many times. You take right. someone from a more mature area, you take them into a more emerging area, and they don't know how to do that. And I've seen them fail without, like, if I'm not equipped this way, I can't do it. Well, you're looking for people to do all kinds of things. What's your checklist of things you look for to say, here's the DNA of someone who can fit in this compressed area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll tell you a quick story. Right when I got to Falcon, prior to getting to Falcon, I was doing a master's over in England. As part of that program, I had to do a final dissertation, which I chose to do as a business project right as I started at Falcon, where I interviewed CEOs who are now in private equity and are very successful. And I interviewed them mainly with a focus of when they went from either public, private, VC, whatever it was, any other asset class to private equity, what was the thing that stuck out to them in terms of, you know, the common trait of what made them successful in that PE-backed environment, and what really stuck out to them? And the number one thing always in private equity is execution. How value creation happens in private equity, it is really getting unsexy things done at a rapid pace for a sustained period. There's not big budgets in a corporate setting. There's not resources. You have to be creative. You have to really just be able to constantly find things to fix in the business. And then from there, come up with solutions and how to fix them and prioritize that in a maniacal way to be able to put points on the board. And that's how companies transform over a 5-year period.
What a killer. That's something that I want to sit in, dude. This idea of execution. Your definition was, I'm looking at my notes right now, so it's getting unsexy things done rapidly in like this maniacal way, you said. What a great dissertation. You must have had some really cool things that you learned there that almost immediately, I'm guessing, helped you evaluate great leaders moving forward.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm grateful for that experience. It was an awesome deep dive into learning this 3 months out of the job. So it was a cool experience.
So can you help, like, what makes someone able to execute that way? If execution is the difference maker and the ability to solve problems that maybe they've never had to solve before, with limited resources, I'm guessing. I guess the ability to accomplish without having big company resources, like, how do you search for that? How do you identify that? How do you see people who actually embody that?
Yeah, so we ask a lot of questions related to, you know, talk to me about the state of the go-to-market organization when you got there, and then what you specifically did to transform that organization. And in that answer, in the answer to that question, I am looking and listening for people that are saying they're finding things to fix, and they can tell me in detail how they fix them without large teams of people to do it. Anytime that I'm in an interview and a leader starts to say, I had a RevOps person do this, or I had my team do that. Yeah, there is some element to delegation and leading a team and empowering people. But in these environments, you should be doing that, but also be very involved with the decision-making, with the driving of that forward, and being involved to really get those things done. So that's a lot of what we look for in terms of just looking for the examples of how people have been able to get things done and transform these go-to-market organizations, whether they're putting in a CRM system, putting in a forecasting system, putting in the new sales methodology, how they're really making the frontline sellers become more effective. That if I had to boil CRO skill set down to one thing in the lower middle market of private equity, which is what we're talking about here, it's making frontline sellers better at what they do and more effective at what they do. That's really what it boils down to.
Joe, I really like that. It makes me think of a leader who I actually had a really frustrating experience with. And he was a guy that had been in his chair for a while, pretty big company. I won't name the company because it's not a flattering story. And when I first met him, and he was kind of this cheerleader guy, he wasn't like this hands-on leader like you just talked about. He told me, he's like, my role is to be, he goes, I'm a high school baseball coach kind of guy, Rob. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I drive the bus. I'm the bus driver. They get off the bus, they go and play their game. And when they get done with the game. They come back to the bus and I give them their juice boxes and tell them good job. I'm like, that's your job? He's like, yeah, man. He goes, my job is to create this environment where we can be excited and be safe and be their friend. And if they win, we celebrate. And if they lose, I tell them it's okay. And he ended up flaming out of that company because he identified, like, I'm juice box guy. I'm bus driver guy. And, is that a common thing that you see, is people that just want to be surrounded by the right resources and then I'll just kind of manage that rather than, like, take charge and helping intentionally grow?
Yeah, no doubt. It's a lot of what we see when we're talking to divisional sales leaders of public organizations, where they're a big number, they can hide, they've got all the resources. You're not really trying to build any scale or transformation to the business. You're just trying to outperform that specific market you're in by maybe a couple percentage points quarter by quarter. So yeah, it's a very different DNA than what we're talking about here.
So job one, if you want to be that next level leader, is be someone who finds things and then doesn't just like ask people to go out and fix it, but takes a role in saying, we identified this and here's what we did. Am I saying that right?
Exactly that. Yeah, it's no more complicated than that.
And I'm going to guess that that's not as common as some of our 50,000 listeners may think. Fair?
No, and even I'll interview people in private equity-backed environments who can't answer that question with the level of conciseness they otherwise should be able to and level of detail. Because there are other private equity firms out there. You know, there are many PE firms out there, some that are really good at driving the transformation and having the people that can do that, and then some that bought businesses and they're more hands-off with them, and they'll accept maybe a 2x cash-on-cash return instead of a 5 to 10 times, which is what a lot of PE firms are going for. So, Joe, within private equity, it varies.
But Joe, I'll go one step out of that and say, okay, I can see why you focus on that in private equity, because you have to be hyper growth. Like, you have to be that 4, maybe 5 year window of trying to compress growth into this ridiculous. I'm thinking of one of the larger companies in the United States that I work closely with. This company is a multi-billion dollar company. They have taken North America and chopped it up into a whole bunch of different areas. And each of those area directors is basically leading a $1 billion company. Okay.
Right.
And so I coached this guy, really great leader, one of my all-time favorites. And when we were preparing him for one of these meetings where the senior leadership comes in and gets almost like a QBR, they have a different title for it. And his results were great. And so he was all about, like, I'm going to throw my scoreboard in their face. That's what this gentleman's approach was. I'm going to make this about the scoreboard, and we're going to hoot and holler about how great the results were. But the CEO asked one question to him. What did you do to make this happen? That was what I thought was a great question. What did you do? Not what did the team do? What did you do to make this happen? Why were the results so great? Because what he was hoping for was, I don't want it to just be we outperform market by 2%, to your point. And he called me when it was done. He's like, Rob, everything went great, but I didn't handle that question very well. I wasn't able to articulate what we did to have such great. It was, we worked hard. We were present. We were a good team. It wasn't, these were the three things that we specifically sunk our teeth into with this result. So I think what you're talking about, yes, of course you need that PE, but that's something that will make you stand out of companies of any size. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, no doubt. And one of the best interview quotes or lines that I love to get is when, if I am interviewing, let's just say somebody who's a divisional leader at a public company and they are interviewing for a PE-backed organization, one of the best things I love to get and hear is that they've identified things and they want to go change them, but in their environment, because there's so much bureaucracy or red tape or things move too slow, they are getting so impatient that they can't fix and drive the amount of change that they want to, which is why they want to come down and do it in private equity.
Impatience. You like impatience.
Oh yeah, high impatience is good to a degree, but it's good.
That's a good, that'll be a little nugget we put on Sales Leadership United. Like, I think sometimes we get a little too patient, right? Is that fair? We just like, okay, hang in. Because there are times to be patient. If, like, I have a framework on that. I love that. You're looking for people that are a little impatient. They don't want to wait for things to roll around.
I heard a great framework from Brian Kite and Tim Kite from Focus 3. I don't know if you know those guys.
Tim Kite's awesome. He is one of my all time favorite guests on this show, by the way.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's incredible. I grew up listening to them both in, college as well as obviously to start my career. And I attribute a lot of my mindset and the way I think to them, but yeah, they've got their 24 by 24 framework, which is from a patient standpoint is if you want any outcome, you work in 24 hours of urgency and then you wait 24 months for the outcome.
That's really good. I've never heard that one. I like that. The 24 by 24.
Yeah, because you get a lot of people who tend to try to work for call it a couple of weeks and go hard and expect that things are going to be different, whether it's something in your career or with weight loss or whatever it is. But it's having that near-term urgency and then the trust that it's going to pay off in 24 months. Do something for 24 months and then on a day-to-day basis, and it will pay off. Just having that.
Really great. All right. So looking at execution is the first part of the DNA stuff that you look for. What else? So I like this idea of us just ticking through some of the things that make mm-hmm. the average ones different than the elite ones. What else makes an elite person stand out to you?
Yeah. Next one is emotional leverage. That's how we define it. And the reason we say leverage in this case is because the best executives and leaders that we see are able to leverage their emotions to drive positive change. They're able to get out of default emotional reactions, respond to the events in daily business in a very intentional way that then drives to better outcomes. And like we talked about, private equity is a very intense world. They're going to have a private equity board of directors breathing down their neck. They're going to have limited resources. Your company's going to have to hit high targets. There's going to be market shifts. There's going to be plenty of things that you can emotionally react to. And there are many people that aren't emotionally ready for that environment. So the things that we look for are things like the intensity, the resilience, the hunger, the drive, the disdain for losing, the competitive nature of people. That's a lot of what we look for out of people. When I'm interviewing and we're one-on-one like this video here, I want to be feeling that sort of energy that, when they're talking about wins and losses in their career, they're getting a little bit pissed off by the losses. And obviously those stay at the forefront of their mind because they are learning from those time and time again and taking those learnings and applying them to grow.
They're not just doing a job. They're competing, right? And I love how you said they act, don't react. We don't just react. We're this emotional leverage. It really interesting concept because now it's not, you said, I wrote this down, they don't act out of default. They work intentionally. They see, they plan, they act, and they do it with high levels of competitiveness. I mean, I love that. Can you give me a couple of examples for we've got 50,000 listeners. What are a couple things that they may use as their own self-assessment on how they match up on that? Any insights there?
Yeah. And going back to the other example I gave where, I love when leaders have been through adverse circumstances at any point in their life and especially in their career. And they have very specific examples of what they were facing, what they did about it and the plan they put in place, and then emotionally how they were able to handle that and drive to a good outcome. There are so many examples of that where, people might not otherwise be ready for that. Or, let's just take COVID, for example, and COVID hit, people didn't know how to navigate it. And so many of sales leaders got laid off or whatever it was, but the best ones sat down and started to plan and started to, have this resiliency and this disdain for losing that we're talking about, but saying, okay, let's try to transform our business. We know that this thing is going to happen for a period of time, but it also might change things in terms of how business gets conducted for the next 10 years. And we know we trust that we're going to come out better, call it in 2 to 3 years, if we start to transform now. And that's what I saw a lot of the best leaders do. And a lot of the best, most successful companies now were ones that were able to do that 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
One of the things I love about this, Joe, is this sounds like reflection would be part of this because you don't want to just act, react. So something hits that I wrote down, the language you used was you really couldn't have planned for. We're going to have shit hit us that we couldn't have planned for. There'll be some things we would have expected to anticipate, maybe some competitive things or I don't know what, but there are some things we should be able to anticipate. But there are other things you can't plan for. And so what I love is you're asking people, what kind of things have hit you that you couldn't plan for? And I would imagine sometimes you say, Could they have planned for that? Couldn't they have planned for that?
Yeah, right.
And then, but what I take from this is when something hits you like that, this concept of being resilient, how you respond, back to Tim Kite, that the R factor, right? And,
oh, yeah.
And how you respond,
the R factor.
Yeah. That takes reflection. Like, are you creating thinking time? Are you creating planning time? That's something that I think is a low cost tool that every leader benefits from. I call it a capacity day, a capacity half day, a capacity couple hours. Sometimes we're so fueled and run by our calendar, we don't create thinking time. And so one of the things that I like to encourage my people I coach to do is, where is your thinking time on your schedule where you can get away from all the distractions and say, what am I doing about X? Is that a common trait that you see that people, or is that not something that you see?
No, it is. And we even have private equity firms that, as a culture, they only yep. want to recruit in people who have that level of introspection, where they sit down, they understand where they need to build skill or where their organization has gaps. And they are so focused on building that skill and closing those gaps and doing what they need to. But that doesn't come with, obviously, like you said, intentionally sitting down and making that time to reflect and check back in with yourself and your organization on how things are going and what could improve. So, yeah, I agree. And to the E plus R equals O point on Tim Kite.
Let's go.
That yes. framework, the R factor, one of the most powerful elements of that. Because people think it's like, oh, we want to get you out of just responding to things because that feels yeah. reactive. But the whole purpose of that R factor workshop is to proactively, in your mind, respond to things, knowing that certain events are going to happen. If this event happens, how am I going to respond very intentionally, steps 1 through 5? And so the best leaders are able to do that. And that's how they regulate their emotions and leverage them.
I'm just going to say, I'm glad you brought it up, because I have not found any leader in my career. I've been doing this for a long time. I coach a lot of leaders. I'm a coaching version of you. I've coached thousands of leaders. Okay. And they all want to get promoted. Every single person I work with wants to be promoted. And I saw a top 10 list of things that people are afraid of that prevent them from advancing in their career. It's an interesting list. But one thing that's missing from that list is they don't fear not growing. Like, my biggest thing I fear is I'm the same 1 year from today that I am right now. And so I found that the lowest cost, biggest reward is that concept of thinking time, capacity day time, saying, here is my thing. Costs you nothing. It's half a day. It's a day a month. It's 2 hours a week. It's whatever it is. But be intentional about evaluate, take it in like Neo in the Matrix. The bullets are flying at him. Put your hand up. Let's look at those bullets, and then we'll push it to the side and they'll all fall down. And so I'm glad to hear you say that's something that you're actually looking for, someone that not only is successful, but has that level of discipline that it's intentional, because otherwise you're going to only be able to respond well to things that you might naturally be wired for. Fair?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt.
So, all right. I can't believe we're down to like 11 minutes, 12 minutes left in this. I can't believe how fast it's gone. I knew it would.
I know.
We've got two things in. We've got execution. We've got emotional leverage. I'd love to get, if there's a couple more, I want to at least get them out for our listeners so you can give them some of your framework.
Yeah, let's go. So next one's leadership, which should seem pretty self-explanatory, but the way
probably
that
isn't, though.
Yeah, no, it's not. And there's a lot of ambiguity and variability to it. The way that we define it, especially in private equity, but I think this is just more general for any asset class, is there's really three things that the best leaders do when it comes to leadership.
I can't wait. Hit me, baby. Hit me.
It's one, they're able to drive what we call organizational ambition. So they set high standards. They inspire belief. They are very clear and direct communicators. Second, they create an outcome-based culture of winning. So they ensure buy-in. They hold people accountable. They engage deeply with their teams. Very different than the juice box leader we were talking about before.
Yes.
And then lastly, it's table stakes, but they have to have personal credibility to build trust. Displayed through skill set, experience, you know, AKA, do I know what I'm talking about so you can trust me? There's a certain level of experience and skill that has come into that. But those would be the three elements we typically look for on leadership.
So drive, they can drive organizational ambition, inspire people, create an outcome-based culture of winning, and then personal credibility. That I really like those. I would imagine that, and again, I'm sitting in it to give people that are listening time to write them down. And you can bet this will be a video segment in Sales Leadership United. We'll have this video segment. This will be a good one for people to pull down and look at. Are they pretty equally weighted? Or is it like a pyramid where they stack on top of each other? Like we create inspiration and then we focus on those outcomes. And ultimately, I trust you because of that, that second C of trust, that competency that you have in order to do it. You got the stuff that I can listen to, et cetera. Like, are they equally weighted? Are they like, how would you break those down?
So the way that I think about it is that if any of these don't exist, the whole structure will break down.
Ooh.
So they're all equally dependent on each other. Like if you are setting high standards, but then you're not holding people accountable to achieving those standards, then that's going to break down. If you are doing the first two of driving the organizational ambition of setting high standards and inspiring belief, and you're ensuring buy-in, but at the same time, people perceive you to not really have the credibility. They're not going to trust you. They're not going to buy into everything going on along the organization. And that's going to be a really tough road. So the way that I think about it is making sure that you have a certain level of competency across all three. That's going to be most important.
Dude, so this is like the opposite of the Bermuda Triangle. This is the this is the performance triangle. And I've heard a lot of people say things like three-legged stool or whatever. And I'm looking at this as a table with three legs. And it can't be one out of balance, like what you said. Like, you've got to shim those up. You got to make all three of those equal. I love how you said if any one of them is weak, the whole thing implodes. Because why? There's so much pressure. People in your world are signing up for compressed pressure. Mm-hmm. And the stakes are high and the rewards are high. But you better have the right DNA to pull that off. I really like that.
Yeah, they are constantly maximizing the situation that they have at hand. And going back to COVID, we saw this, where 3 months after COVID, we had a lot of calls from private equity firms wanting to replace their leadership teams, because what happened? You had plenty of businesses that were very healthy, growing at 30 to 40% per year, who had good leaders, but not transformationally great leaders. But once the business went from growing 30% a year to nothing overnight, that exposed a lot of leaders that otherwise weren't ready for that role and weren't ready for the mantle of leadership it would take to take the company and navigate the company over the next 3 years.
Which takes you back to your first one, execution. You got to find stuff, fix stuff. Like, I like how this all fits into a framework. I really like that. Okay. So leadership, I know you got a couple more work. I'm looking at the clock. I'm sorry we're going fast, but I want
to. I'm glad you are.
So. Yeah. I want our listeners to get at the gist of this. So after leadership, you got anything, any of those you want to share?
Yeah. So then we got IQ and EQ. So first one on IQ, cognitive horsepower. I think all else equal, smarter leaders tend to outperform their counterparts, especially in private equity when we're talking about this condensed period of growth and the pressure's up. I cannot take credit for this quote. This is my partner, Rob, who says this a lot, but in private equity, we are always looking for someone that has a white collar brain and a blue collar work ethic. Someone that can add a lot of value at the board level, laying the foundation, laying the strategy at the 30,000 feet level, but then can dive in and do the work on the front lines with the team. So that's a lot of what we're looking for there.
I'm going to steal that too.
Go for it.
Elite leaders have a white collar brain, but a blue collar work ethic. Because I'm slowing us down on this. Even though I know I said we got to hurry, IQ and EQ were 4 and 5. You put them together in this now.
Yep.
I'm paying attention. And and I like that because I've met a lot of smart people who don't connect to people. So that's the high IQ, maybe lower EQ. And I've also met plenty of high EQ. My EQ is I get you. It's not I got you. I got you is transactional. I get you is transformational, I think. And so if I had to choose one over the other, I think I would choose able to connect. But if you can't have insight on what to do, then you can't lead them into uncharted waters. So right. I like how you got to have both. What's the hardest one to develop? I think you can get smarter. I also think you can connect to people different. Like, any observations on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think, in my opinion, probably the raw IQ is harder to develop than EQ. Because I mean, with EQ, we're talking about things like self-esteem, vulnerability, authenticity, belief in others, empathy.
Ability to connect with others. Like, that's a big one. You got to connect.
Exactly.
You got to connect.
And both of these things are hardwired into people from the time that they grew up and their formative experiences. And I do agree that you can build skill in both. I would say there's probably more direct paths to building interpersonal skill in terms of, you know, I've seen the benefits. I've hired Ali Razakis, who was on the show, as my coach.
You hired Ali? That's awesome. Oh, let's go.
Yeah. Ali is the one that pushed me to start posting on LinkedIn because she's built businesses on LinkedIn before.
Yeah.
And that led me to posting about you. And now here we are. So it's pretty, I love Ali. Pretty incredible.
I just got an email from Ali yesterday. I'm so shout out to everybody listening. Ali is a great resource for anybody who hasn't like reached out to her. So yeah.
Yeah. If you're looking to get more interpersonal skill, EQ skill in terms of understanding yourself, growing your self-esteem, becoming a more vulnerable leader, which is, in my opinion, the best power trait you can have, especially in private equity, where you have a lot going on around you. You've got a private equity firm that is always constantly evaluating your performance, and they are highly critical. And if you are someone who is in career preservation mode, where you are constantly reacting, you're defensive, you have low self-esteem, and you're not vulnerable, then they're going to feel that. They're going to feel the fact that you're hiding, that you're hesitant, that you're not leaning in to drive the transformation that they're required, as opposed to someone who's vulnerable and has high self-esteem. They are open to asking for help from the private equity firm. They're open to feedback. They're open to empowering their team and getting the input on their team's front to be able to make things happen at the business. So I've seen it play out in both ways. And over time, the people that have high self-esteem, high vulnerability typically win. I think you can coach that and build skill in that a little bit easier. I guess a little more one-to-one than cognitive force power, but that's just my opinion.
We're down to our last few minutes, and I'm going to want to make sure you have time to make sure, because you got 50,000 people that can now enter your pool of potential future PE people that you work with. I want to give you a chance to put a bow on stuff. Like, if we got people that are like, man, I like this framework, and you probably have more, but I have to stop on the IQ EQ one just because of time. Sadly, we'll probably bring you back.
We're through them all. We're good.
All right. Good. Yeah. How do people intentionally improve? Like, if they look at your scoreboard, like, you don't have to just say like, I either have it or I don't. Like, how do you, like, you're the perfect example. You're a self-taught CRO. You started listening to the podcast. You hired Ali. You've done all these things. You are like saying, I'm good at what I do. I've done thousands of these interviews, but I ain't going to just sit fat and happy. I'm going to get better. Any advice to these 50,000 listeners on things they can do to improve their elite DNA?
Yeah, I think it gets back to a lot of what you were talking about before, where it's being intentional about creating this reflection time and looking at yourself and your competencies and your skill set as a business to list out, you know, where you are right now and on a level of 1 to 10 or however you want to do it in terms of the skill sets that are going to make you an elite leader. And then charting your course very intentionally and picking one or two at a time to really focus on. Like, call it 2 years ago, I was probably a little bit lighter on interpersonal, and I knew that. And so I hired Ali, started doing the work intentionally to improve there. And cool part is, when we created this Crucible assessment, I took it 4 years ago, I scored in the 76th percentile. Now I'm the 91st percentile. It's crazy. And this stuff works. It's insane. So you can build skill. You just have to be intentional about it. You have to sit down. You have to reflect. You have to take those moments to say, okay, where am I going to go? Similar to building a company, you know, where you're sitting down now, you're saying, where do I want my company to be in 5 years? Same thing with how you are as a leader. You have to be very intentional about that. So that's the takeaway here, at least in my opinion.
You know, this has been amazing. We're down to the bottom of our time. How do people get more of you? Like, you're a great follow, and you're a great person to know. And we got 50,000 people that may have things they want to like continue the conversation, because I had to shut us down. How do people connect to you? How do they learn more about you? How do they learn about Falcon? All of that stuff.
Yeah. Connect on LinkedIn, as well as we created, this was 3 years ago, we created the largest online digital community of private equity backed executives or people aspiring to be in PE, which is called privateequitycxo.com. And so if you are looking to be in PE or you're on there, join there. And there is a ton of content in terms of how you can put more points on the board in a PE back setting, learn about what that environment looks like, learn about a lot of the DNA and things that PE firms care about if you do want to get into that. And so those would be the two ways, you know, PECXO, as well as just follow me on LinkedIn. connect.
We'll put and we'll put both of those links in the show notes. We'll have your link to LinkedIn, and we'll have to that that community you talked about.
Yeah.
Got a final thought? We got, like I said, we got worldwide audience that are listening to you. This is flown by. What an awesome conversation. You were even better than I expected you to be, Joe. I knew it was going to be fun. Surpassed my expectations. You got a final thought for 50,000 leaders all around the world?
Just look, be you, be authentic. I love connecting with people who are transparent and are comfortable in their own skin and want to make an impact in this world, especially in the businesses that we have. So, yeah, that's the last mic drop I will give to everybody listening.
All right. His name is Joe Gravino. He is helping people not just win in an increasingly competitive world. He's helping them do it in a compressed way, almost like an ant under the magnifying glass with the sun coming through, right? But not wither and burn, but survive and thrive. And he's doing it by sharing the DNA of elite leaders. I hope you liked his framework. I hope you choose to measure yourself up and find ways that you can improve, because whether you choose PE or not, this framework is going to help you be a more high impact, more elite leader. And Joe, on behalf of 50,000 sales leaders all around the world, I want to thank you for giving us an hour of your time. I want to thank you for sharing your insights, because you do have a perspective that is very unique that every single one of our listeners can benefit from. And as I'll say to you, as I say to everybody else, thanks for joining us. And my man, happy selling.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. Grateful to be here.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another So What portion of the Sales Leadership Podcast, where we break down that interview and we ask ourselves, why did that conversation even matter? But first, this episode is brought to you by Sales Leadership United. Sales Leadership United has had so much growth, and I'm so grateful to each of you who have chosen to check it out. The purpose of Sales Leadership United is simple. I want to give you access to the largest collection of sales leadership assets in the world. Listen, I coach over 100 sales leaders. They're in big companies. They're in new companies. They're in every industry. They're people that are new to leadership and award-winning sales leaders. Some of them are people that are new to their companies, and some have been in their companies for over 30 years. But every single one of them wants more tools. They want more insights. They want more perspective. They want to sharpen their edge. They ask me questions like, how do you create systems? How do you create foundations? How do you create change? How do you coach? How do you lead up or manage up? How do you connect to a totally different generation? And the number one question I get, what are other leaders like me doing to solve problems like the ones I'm facing right now? And that's why you need to check out Sales Leadership United. All the tools, all the trainings, all the techniques, perspective that comes from the benefit of thousands of hours with leaders from all around the world. Listen, I want you to think of Sales Leadership United as the Home Depot for sales leaders. I got aisles on every kind of topic that you'd ever imagine. And with a simple search, you can find multiple things that will help you connect to those you lead. And if you haven't checked out Sales Leadership United, head to salesleadershipunited.com and use the code ROB at checkout to get a free trial on me. Now, I hope you found this conversation with Joe just as interesting as I did. Joe leads a practice that finds CROs that can thrive in the private equity crucible. And make no mistake, the stakes are higher when you work for a private equity firm. And not only has Joe had to create a set of lenses to look through that will help him pick winners for the companies they work with, he's also had to become his own de facto CRO. And I'll be honest, I love the fact that this podcast was a big part of his learning process. I love that he shares that listening to this show every week has helped him raise his game. So thanks for sharing that, Joe. And so when he agreed to share some of his story and what his DNA of an elite sales leader looks like, I was hooked. And he did not disappoint. I loved everything Joe had to share today. His five catalysts making up the DNA of an elite leader were awesome. Number one, execution. Number two, emotion. Number three, leadership. Number four, IQ. Number five, EQ. Now, that's a checklist every single leader in the world can use to self-assess and self-correct. And you should. In fact, you should go back and listen, because he gives some really great detail on each one. This is one worth turning into your own checklist and punch list. And I'll have several of the videos of it available for you on those critical areas inside Sales Leadership United to make it easy. But I think my favorite part of what we talked about was this emotional leverage element. Because every single person can grind. In fact, that's the default. The default is go work harder. You know, that Finding Nemo where Dory says, just keep swimming, right? I mean, that's a lot of what leaders do is just grind a little more, grind a little harder. And for an average leader, that's the go-to. But you're not listening to this show to be average. You're listening so you can be elite. I think, like I said, everyone can and they should find ways to execute. Okay, that should be a place that we start. How good are we at grinding? How good are we at executing? In fact, executing and grinding are totally different things, but work ethic shows up there quickly. I've found that very few people are actually taught how to build and leverage their mindsets. And then if you can get that right, it changes everything fast. And too many people think it's like a woo-woo thing. I'm not talking about folding your legs and just like manifesting things into existence by humming and whatever. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about creating a bulletproof, titanium-grade mindset. I have more and more people talking to me about this. I just did a big group training with one of the biggest sales orgs in North America, their executive leadership team. And what they really wanted to dive into is how do we get more intentional about building mindsets? And so when Joe and I talked about this, it was like perfect timing, because mindset is what makes it so you can grow past that acting out of default that Joe talked about. He referred to most of us just go to our defaults, and it's true. We are wired the way we're wired. We do what we do, and mindset makes it so we can do something different than just what our default action is, and we can start acting intentionally. That's a big separator from a good leader and an elite one, choosing to act, not react. It gives you a platform that fuels both intention and resiliency. And that intentionality, that ability to not just respond, but to be in charge, this is something that is more difficult to develop than most people think. I'm going to be putting a training on this in Sales Leadership United this week about having the ability to do more than just respond. I'm going to channel one of my favorite Seinfeld episodes in it. But I think it's one that you're going to be interested in, because the ability to intentionally override your natural response to challenges, and that natural response is fight, flight, or freeze, that's something that you need to work on and build discipline in. And so my advice is to take Joe's advice. That framework that Joe laid out for us today, you ought to look through and say, how do I make that mine? How do I make that my bag of tricks? Because you can improve your skills. You can change your leadership DNA. You can be intentional about any part of your leadership approach and tools. Now, it may not surprise you if you've been following the show for long. You know a little bit about my personal story. Joe's story spoke to me both professionally and personally, because less than a year ago, I had to make a choice on whether I was going to change my real life DNA or not, because I was dying of colon cancer. The doctor said I had only months to live, and there were no real treatment options available to me because I had waited too long before getting a diagnosis, and as a result, a prognosis. And so after a lot of looking and digging and finding, I found an option in another country that gave me options. And it would require me to modify and mutate my DNA, my human DNA. And this new DNA would either cure me, it would kill those cancer cells, or it would kill me because it would kill the wrong cells. And it was scary. But I made the decision to change my DNA, and I got lucky because I responded well. And that change in my DNA changed everything. And I mean everything. The same is true for you. Changing your leadership DNA, it'll change everything. So take charge. Change your leadership DNA. Start with the insights Joe shared today and get a growth partner, someone who can help you change that DNA, because changing your DNA alone makes it much, much more difficult. You heard Joe share that he has a coach. I'll give her a shout out, Ali Razakis. He heard about her and was introduced to her on this show, and he was so impressed he reached out to her. Now she's helping him grow fast. What a smart decision on Joe's part. Find people like Ali who will help you get what you need so you can get what you want. It's my favorite thing I do, is watching people get what they want. A growth partner will help you get places that matter to you. Who cares what it matters to other people? It'll get you places that matter to you. So find the teammates who will help you get where you want to go faster, because changing your DNA will make all the difference. So, Joe, thanks for joining me. Thank you for sharing your insights. Congrats on the amazing work you're doing at Falcon. And I'm so pumped that the insights from episodes of this show have been helpful to you. Thank you for sharing your story and your insights with 50,000 leaders all around the world. I can't wait to get updates from you on how things continue to grow and success, and the success you continue to achieve. So be sure to connect with Joe. Connect with him on LinkedIn. Check out his community he mentioned. I have links. I have links to both of these, his LinkedIn and his community, in the show notes to make it easy for you. And then be sure to head to Sales Leadership United to get video clips of the conversation with Joe and hundreds of other sales leaders. There will be several videos from this episode you'll want to use as you create your own changes to the leadership DNA of yourself and those you lead. Finally, thanks to each of you, our listeners. The greatest compliment you can give us is to share the show with those you work with. Introduce them to the Sales Leadership Podcast. Leave us a review on iTunes if you're comfortable. And you can support the show by checking out Sales Leadership United. Head to salesleadershipunited.com and check it out. You'll be glad you did. Thank you for your support of the Sales Leadership Podcast. Our job as sales leaders is to create life-changing years for the people you lead. If you like this message, please share it this week with someone who needs to hear it, and then get after it this week, because life is short and there's no guarantee of what comes tomorrow. Maximize what you do today. Be elite, live strong, and chase your passions, and do your best work so you can live your best life. And don't ever forget, you got this and I got you. Here's to a terrific week. Thank you so much for joining the Sales Leadership Podcast, the award-winning sales leadership podcast for those sales leaders looking to create legendary impact to those they lead. The greatest compliment you can give is to share this show and any of your favorite episodes with your fellow sales leaders, social media followers, or other communities you're part of. The Sales Leadership Podcast is brought to you by the Jepson Performance Group. If you want to discuss any of the topics discussed on the show, want to level up your leadership impact, discuss executive coaching services, or even include me at an upcoming event, hit me up at rob@jeppg.com. That's rob@jeppg.com. And to those of you working to become a legendary sales leader, I salute you and wish you much success on your journey. Whenever you need someone in your corner, you know where to find me.